I think we should just let the song play, Tim. Really. I mean, the heck with the interview, right? I mean, we don't
need to talk to Mike.
There is no them. There's only us. We're going to get back to that. U2 Invisible. Big surprise that I asked him to play a U2 song with my interview with my next guest, Michael LaFleur. We're going to talk about the sacred secular divide, I think. Or the lack thereof. And maybe finding our way back home. Two things before diving in. I forgot to talk about Drew's video of the week. And it's something...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can get it online. And I picked a kind of an interesting one. It's fairly quick, but it was connected sort of to a thread that I think Michael and I are going to talk about in this. Why is Burkina Faso letting mosquitoes in? It's about this innovative kind of way of attending to malaria and other malaria-borne diseases and so on, and dengue and Japanese encephalitis and so on, mosquito-borne diseases. These are genetically modified mosquitoes that are going to hopefully eradicate other disease-bearing mosquitoes. So it's about innovation, and that was the idea behind this one. It's kind of an interesting one. Dig deep. Bill Gates is involved. All kinds of people are. The One Campaign is behind it. There's another little YouTube Bono tie-in.
Yeah, but are they Christian mosquitoes?
That's there the you question. Go. That is the question, and that's what we're going to talk about. And
are
I
they
think,
sucking the blood of Christ? Is that
that's
what you're
right,
trying
yeah,
to do?
Because exactly.
Mosquitoes do suck.
They do indeed on a variety of levels, without a doubt. And then I'm going to just... So here I am opening up my sandwich that my wife graciously prepared for me today, and there's a little note from my daughter that says, break a leg. Come on. Isn't Michael... Isn't
Victoria
that
is as sweet as they come.
Yeah. So and that to me is connected to what we're going to talk about here. And Michael LaFleur, he's a musician, he's a filmmaker, he's an editor, a great conversationalist. He's got a lot going on in his life, and also a plays a mean game of hide and seek, from what I've heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
You got me on that one.
Yeah. Well,
lots of sports in my life, but I never had hide and seek.
Eclectic, capital E.
Many pounds ago, I did have an athletic...
Thanks for joining us today.
You were a basketball player, weren't you?
Serious, many sports, about four or five sports, yeah, varsity level.
So we connect, you know, on a lot of levels, I'm sure, but film has to be one of the biggies. There's a... And I want to use this as our conversation about the sort of the sacred secular thing that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. In the church community I was raised in, that, you know, there the secular was over there, you know, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world, right? Abstain from all appearance of evil, this kind of an approach, which, frankly, with it came the footnotes of guilt and shame and what's in and what's out and what's good and what's bad and all of that. And so I want to now just rewind to an Oscar winning speech by Viola Davis a few years ago, as she looked at Meryl Streep in the audience and said some beautiful things about Meryl, but some incredible things about being human. And one of the things that really struck me is that she talked about, and I know you know this clip, about finding our way home. And isn't that what great stories are about? And, you know, Michael, you may not have heard it, but I'm going to go back to Noah, noahsong.com. Check out Noah. Noah Zachrin was our musical guest today, and his first song was Declare Your Love.
Ooh,
I mean, how
nice.
Beautiful is yeah. that? Dad, Break a Leg. Bono, you too. There is no them. There's only us. I mean, talk to me about some of that stuff, what we've done to our being human.
Well, just even to pick up the little strand of story that just randomly came out, Tim saying you were an athlete. I grew up in a traditional evangelical household, and without intending it, I assumed and inferred from my upbringing that somehow the things that mattered most were the so-called spiritual things. But I grew up loving playing sports and basketball and volleyball and fastball. And I had no real appreciation how much I think I now see that God actually loves the passion of the human race and loves the varied interests that we have. And I never saw God as having anything to do with that. I saw sort of that was the worldly stuff. And if I was ever to come to Jesus and make a commitment, because I didn't as a young person, as a teenager, I would have to give up that stuff, because that was of the world. And somehow we never got those scriptures that talks about actually God loving the world and the Word actually becoming flesh and God sort of being quite comfortable getting right inside our humanity, our real humanity, or even our broken humanity, and beginning to engage us from inside that place of our, of who we really are, not this idealized self, not this platonic sort of myth about something, some ideal realm that lives detached from the earthly realm. And that mythology, that platonic sort of virus or Neoplatonic virus got passed down through our spiritual forefathers, and many of us grew up with a framework
so,
that had...
So if Drew was here right now, he would have interrupted you about three or four sentences ago and said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm pretty sure. What is who is Neoplatonic? What is that? Is that some sort of new metal that we've discovered?
Well, that's great. Here is the philosopher asking the non-philosopher that question, so you can backfill it. But in essence, the universe is broken up into two sort of realms, the higher plane, the ideal plane, the place where one aspires to. And that's where all the good and the beautiful and the true things are. And this earthly realm, the kind of the sensual, the fleshly, the stuff down here, yeah, that's secondary. You kind of live in this zone, but you don't really pay it much attention, and it doesn't have much to do with the higher realm. And so we grew up with this divided way of looking at the world and the spiritual
and
things.
And Michael, and somehow we got to get there, right?
Absolutely.
It's about getting to that. It's not, we're never present. We have to get there still.
We do. And so, you know, out of a religious framework like some of us were raised in, it's about, you know, it's always this aspiring to be good enough and even getting across this great divide instead of realizing that a Hebrew or a more integrated worldview has a completely different way of seeing it. There's nothing that's separated from the presence of good and God and beautiful.
I went to the Four Spiritual Laws track that I remember growing up with that had a diagram, I think, in it of here and there, us and them, with a bridge drawn in to get us over to the other side, essentially.
Right? Sinful man, holy God.
Right,
Again, well-meaning, God is holy, but what does that term mean, and how do we understand what's gone on and happened to us when God becomes one of us?
Do you know what the fifth spiritual law is?
You got me.
Realizing that there are more than four spiritual laws.
That's a really good one.
I think that's exactly what it is.
So that dualism or that two sort of worlds, that sort of one that we might aspire to or the ideal realm, and then, here's my everyday life. There is no everyday life. There are no mere mortals. Everything in life is imbued, I believe, with a meaning, a significance, and it is all part of one whole that is sacred and beautiful.
And for C.S. Lewis fans out there, this is what he meant by being surprised by joy, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that great quote, no mere mortals, I mean, that's, I've never met a mere mortal because one doesn't exist on the earth.
Everyone, every moment, every thing, every person, every place is divine in some regard.
A friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours who has been on the show before, has got a great quote, and I actually put it up on a poster, and back maybe we can share it with friends, but it's this great quote. It says this: the recognition of the sacred presence of the Father, Son, and Spirit in every person, moment, and place is the end of religion and the beginning of the freedom to live. Could repeat that again, but I don't know if you got that. Tim's looking puzzled at the ceiling. So here we go, one more time.
It's my usual look.
The recognition of the sacred presence of the Father, Son, and Spirit in every person, moment, and place is the end of religion and the beginning of the freedom to live.
So people are going to want to go back and probably write that down and reflect on it, because I think there's a lot going on there. And I think it connects to Viola and her talk and about finding this place home. It sounds, oh, wow, it's so smart and academic and theological, and it is all those things, but it's also beautifully poetic and meaningful. And I think that, for me, having spent a fair bit of time in the university and loving every minute of it, for me, it's all about trying to make contact with reality in meaningful ways. So what does that even mean, Michael? Like, okay, great, sounds good, lovely. I wrote it down. I'll reflect on it later tonight. But how does that change my life?
Well, in my life, if I had had some apprehension of that as a young person, I wouldn't have allowed an unconscious wedge to be driven in between the things I love doing.
Were you one of those guys that burned your records?
I In fact, one of my most sacred acts of devotion as a newly professing believer was to destroy my entire record collection, not just, you know, the really bad stuff.
Cue Dancing Queen, I believe.
Yes, just unbelievable. But that was all, that's what we knew. That was part of this divide. And if I had actually known that this journey is about actually recovering our authentic humanity, being every part of my life is being valued and embraced by God, and I don't need to sort of parcel it off. I can't. There's nothing that's not sacred in my life. And
what if you don't believe in God? How are you authentically divine? Like,
that's really good.
Or you're standing in another worldview. So you're a Muslim. You're a Buddhist. You're a Hindu.
Well, I think that quote I offered earlier from our friend, and we might as well just quote his name. Our friend's name is Baxter Kruger. And he has, I think that just changes everything, because to me it gives me the ability to see the presence of light and beauty and truth and goodness in every person that I think comes from the one true source of all that light, but they may only know it inside their own tradition, inside their own faith. But it doesn't give us this binary universe, this one or zero approach to valuing persons, to value. So all of humanity, indeed our own unique humanity, I think is hugely dignified through this. And
so there's
valued.
So if we can go, we've been talking a bit about symbol and metaphor today, Tim. And is this a teachable moment? You tell me. But there's a circle.
I'm a drama teacher. Don't ask me. If you're acting it out, sure. And go.
What I want to know is, where's the meaning in drama? That's what I want to know. Michael, is there, you know, as a pastor, as a filmmaker, as a friend, as a human being,
hide and seek artist,
is there a circle then, in a sense, metaphorically, not just metaphorically, relationally, around everything?
Well, this beautiful word that the early church fathers quoted called perichoresis, this mutual indwelling. Everything belongs and is connected in Jesus to everything else. So there can't be any space that exists in life, in human experience, however unusual it might be, that somehow God can't be present there, isn't present there. And I loved what Viola Davis said. It was actually in her tribute to Meryl Streep receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award.
She won the Oscar that year, too.
She did. She won the Oscar, but it was Meryl Streep who was getting honored at the Golden Globes a couple of years back. And Viola Davis had this extraordinary speech, and the fact that it was prepared made it, I think, even more profound.
Tim, can we get this YouTube video up on online too, maybe?
I will try.
Gave you the link. It's easy.
One more thing to do, man.
The best version of it I gave you might have other sub-captions under it, but it's a great caption. And Viola basically was trying to help affirm this extraordinary quality Meryl Streep has in terms of her acting ability and what she does when she engages a character in a story, in a movie. And she does this beautiful thing that I saw immediately as a picture of, hang on, that sounds like, in the best understanding of what the Holy Spirit does, if we allow him to bring our true humanity to the surface. And depending if we wanted to quote some of it, but here's kind of the riff I took on it, or perhaps you're gonna play the clip, but this is
a little too long.
It's a little too long, but you'll probably cue it for folks later. But it is a really inspiring clip, and here's just some highlights from it. Did you want me to cite it or?
Yeah, no, go.
Yeah.
Go,
so Viola says this to Meryl as she's delivering the speech. She says, "Quote: I can only imagine where you go, Meryl, when you disappear into a character. I imagine that you're in them, patiently waiting, using yourself as a conduit, encouraging them, coaxing them to release all their mess, confess, expose, to live." It continues on after a few more moments. "You make me feel that what I have in me, my body, my face, my age, is enough. You encapsulate that great Emile Zola quote, that if you ask me as an artist what I came into this world to do, I, as an artist, would say I came to live out loud."
She brings it back. I remember it actually being, well, I mean, being struck by the by everything that was going on at the Oscars too. It would have been interesting to have been, or sorry, the Globes. It would have been interesting to be there to see what how the room tone changed, because it was a beautiful speech on so many levels. But for me, it was about home. She brought it back to, you know, Meryl, you make us all want to feel at home, or something along those lines. Is that what great music, great storytelling, it doesn't have to be spiritual, it doesn't have to be religious, it all is. It's all, we're all just scrambling to get back home in some way, shape, or form, aren't we?
Well, especially because most of
us... Sorry, we're already at home.
We are at home.
We just need to recognize it.
But most of us are alienated from ourselves and our own authentic humanity and our community. So it's actually giving ourselves permission to come back to the truth of who we are. And if you're a person of faith, coming out of a Christian worldview, then I would suggest we have even a stronger anchoring and centering dynamic that's at work in our worldview. So we are able then to draw the deepest out of this truth and experience it perhaps to the full if we have eyes open and are responsive. And, you know, for me, I riffed on this a little bit, and, you know, the way I understood it was there was ways in which this was playing out in my life, in all our lives, that I don't think I'd appreciate before. So I actually took that. And if I was functioning out of my old framework from a number of years ago, I would have said, oh, well, you know, too bad Viola doesn't know Jesus or somehow,
right,
you know.
Right.
And it's like, wow, no, actually, I think she's speaking truth that connects with all our life and humanity and spirituality. And so I would suggest that Jesus came into the world and the Holy Spirit was poured out all in humanity to help us live out loud, to remove within us, to remind us that we're not alone, and to take everything that belongs to Jesus and then to make it our own. And so the Holy Spirit's kind of like Meryl Streep, entering into our humanity, into our real experience, and then bringing it to fullness. It's just great.
See, that's Meryl's next role, is the Holy Spirit.
Right. So, but can we circle back a little bit?
Sure.
What does this mean to the person who doesn't believe, to the agnostic or to the atheist? Does this change the story? Because I would argue what that atheist has decided on from an existential point of view about their life and where they're going is probably somewhat rooted in a what you might call an older explanation of of a sacred secular divide. So could this have an impact in some way? Might they just go, yeah, whatever, Michael, God still doesn't exist, so therefore, period. Or might they go, interesting interpretation. Maybe I should start reflecting on things in a new way.
I wonder if there might be a wellspring of beauty and creativity and truth that I've just completely not given consideration to. And just an invitation to say, hey, what if this God is not like all these, so many of the bad portrayals that we see out
right.
there, and all, you know, the God hates this people group or that cultural group or this subset.
Well, so many portrayals of spirituality or religion or God are always related, it seems to me, often related is better, moralism. It's what you do, what you don't do. It's where you spend your time. It's that whole sacred secular thing to come back, I think. And it's infuriating and really debilitating. And what are the, and I, you know, and going into our next interview with Melanie Wood about her film coming up on Knowledge Network, Living in Hope, it's all about mental illness. How does this misinterpretation, or let's go back to that Platonic thing, how does that actually affect us mentally and spiritually and relationally?
Yeah, well, we are divided from ourselves. I mean, we aren't at home in being ourselves.
Right.
And obviously there's lots of stuff about identity and about, you know, how people have come to start to realize they don't have to edit themselves. They can actually do it. And I love how Meryl, you know, Viola Davis touched on that and spoke to this permission that Meryl's given Viola and so many other actors to actually dare to believe that what they have in themselves is enough. They don't have to be something other than who they are to be a fully valued and dignified and just a thriving human being.
So then there's something spiritual about everything for you then, for every film, for every story, for every person, every hand you shake, etc.
Because there is something that's at something that's at play in behind and sometimes woven into the fabric of life that we may be unaware of. But to me, all of life is spiritual. All of life is an integrated, beautiful mosaic, and sometimes we're aware of it, sometimes we're not. And whether a person grows up outside of any tradition or makes a conscious choice to push back from it, there's still,
see,
to me,
if you believe you're looking at the world through a particular lens, and you and I and Tim and I think everyone in the room, including the interns, are wearing glasses. We're all looking through a lens.
Absolutely.
So you change the lens and things change.
Yes.
There maybe, just maybe, this is about a new interpretation. This is about a new perspective. What isn't about perspective?
Yeah.
But that's the magic of this for me. Whether you believe it or not, it's almost irrelevant. But it puts a new lens on it for you to go, never thought of that before. I need to have another conversation about this. I need to dig a little deeper. And that's isn't that beautiful? I mean, that's what a great film is. And again, Noah, great songwriting. You know, it's all connected. There is no them. There's only us.
Well, even when you hear someone's stories, like Cujo's story or someone else, as I was listening coming into the studio today, you're going, yeah, there's something that immediately is drawn out of me because it's a resonating. It's something in my humanity is resonating with something in their humanity. We may not have the same story, but there's a shared human experience. And when we actually give people permission to tell their stories and to celebrate them in art or song or poetry or however, then we ourselves are given permission.
Shared human experience, similarity through difference. Wow, if we all got out of bed thinking that way in the morning, now that truly would make America great again.
That's too good. You know, I wish the older Michael could have spoken into the younger Michael's life, because if I could turn the clock back and kind of offer some wisdom to myself, this is how I would kind of finish up that Meryl Streep, Viola Davis analogy that kind of came alive for me last year as I was working through some prep for a session I was preparing. And this is what I would say to myself. Michael, I have come. I am embracing you. I'm wanting you. I'm enabling you to embrace your own unique humanity. You're one of a kind, personalized reflection of Jesus' glorious humanity. To dare to believe and feel that what you have, Michael, in yourself, in your body, your face, your age is enough. And to freely and joyfully do what only you can do, Michael, in this world. To live out loud as your best self, your real self, as a fully known and deeply loved child of God.
Worth reflecting on a whole lot of levels. Do you think Drew Marshall needs to live his life out loud? I think he kind of already does that.
Oh, he's too loud as it is.
He really is.
Just a little qualifier about your best self. I don't know what part of him's living out loud, but I'm not sure if it's the best. There might be some other parts of him that are living out loud.
What are you taking us out to on this interview with? What do we got? What do we got? What do we
a little Chicago, because if we're talking about good music, why not? There you go. You know what I'm saying?
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome, David. Great to be here. Nice to see you again, Tim.